The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 19.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Welcome back, folks. Dan Reed here. Happy to have you back to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast. A couple of quick things. Click over to my podcasts page at culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts. There you will find my social media icons, and you can follow me on your favorite social media platform. Please do rate and review the show on your favorite podcatcher. Ratings and reviews do move the show up, and the more people who find it, the more people who will get cooking. As we enter into another election cycle and the madness that's begun with the new Congress, misinformation is going to be everywhere. Bite back against that misinformation with an education from Liberty Classroom. Get the education you were denied by the government schools. Visit culinarylibertarian.com/biteback. Today, David Akimoto returns to talk coffee. You may remember David from the recent chocolate episode. Well, David is here to talk about his experience in Thailand working on and with coffee farms and coffee farmers. He's going to tell us a little bit about how the beans are picked, how they're roasted, what to look for in a really spectacular bag of coffee beans, and then how to brew a cup of coffee. Yeah, I know. I thought I knew too, but I learned a few things, and I also learned that a proper barista might be your best friend in the whole wide world. So welcome, David.
Hey, nice to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you back. So before we get into it, we're talking about coffee today. And before we get too much into that, tell me a little bit about your own personal experience. Are they coffee grows? Is it a coffee orchard? What do they call it?
So for me personally, when I first got into coffee, I didn't know too much about it. So I wanted to really immerse myself and really learn everything. So I personally visited farms up in the north of Thailand. So that's where I got my first feel of how the bean was actually, you know, from the plant itself for, and then you harvesting the bean. So that's kind of how it all started. So I just started going to the farms, and I've been going there pretty periodically just to go there and, you know, help out the farmers to actually farm the beans themselves. So you learn a lot from the farmers when you actually go to the source versus just, you know, drinking the coffee every day.
Well, no, I think that's probably true for pretty much anything.
Yeah, that's pretty true.
All right, well, let's start with some basics. As far as coffee goes, what are the kinds of bean varieties and which ones are better and why?
Okay, so there's actually 124 known species of coffee plants around the world. But out of the 124, there's only two that we actually drink. The rest, the coffee just isn't good, so it's not really well known. And basically the two that you probably are familiar with and most of the people that are listening would be is going to be Robusta and Arabica. And the two differences between the two is Robusta is considered like a lower grade. It's grown normally at a lower elevation and it's very easy to maintain. It's got a high disease resistance and it produces higher yields when it actually does grow, so you do get a lot more coffee out of it itself. The problem with Robusta, though, is that it has this weird astringent flavor that's very strong and bitter, and it leaves this this film in your mouth as you drink it, and it does have higher caffeine content, so you would jitter a bit more if you're not used to a high amount of caffeine. Arabica, on the other hand, is higher in quality. It's normally preferred with cafes and coffee distributors. It yields about half the amount when the plant actually fruits. It's got half the amount of caffeine, roughly, but it has aromatic properties that most people do enjoy. and it's got a pleasant flavor overall if done, if roasted and farmed properly.
Okay. So let's start with a few things. Let's start with the simple, the first one. So you said that Arabica is about half of the caffeine in general of the Robusta. So what is the average caffeine content of an Arabica coffee bean?
The caffeine content after the bean has been roasted, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, so every strain is a bit different as far as the amount itself. So if you think about it, Robusta roughly has about 2.2 to 3% caffeine versus the Arabica is only going to have about 1% per bean out of the bean itself.
All right. So that's not really very much. And I like coffee. My wife drinks the coffee for the caffeine. I like the coffee for the flavor. So I think I know something about espresso, and I know that, I'm not sure. There is a strong opinion amongst people that, I need some caffeine. I'm going to go get an espresso. But isn't it the case that caffeine in espresso is less per ounce of espresso for coffee because of the heavy roasting?
Not necessarily. For the reason why people assume that espresso is higher in caffeine, and it technically can be depending on what type of coffee you're drinking itself, is because of the fact that you have less water. You have to think about it. When you drink a black coffee or an Americano, for instance, you're really taking on about 80% water. So you're diluting an espresso shot itself into the water. So the only way that you can increase the caffeine content in it is what baristas normally do, is they'll add 2 shots or 3 shots into their drink instead of your single shot espresso. And every shot that you're adding to your drink, you're actually adding more caffeine to it, if that makes easier sense.
That does make sense. All right, so let's talk about elevation. You mentioned that the Robusta beans tend to grow at a lower elevation and the Arabica is at a higher elevation. So why or how does elevation impact the quality of the coffee bean?
Okay, so elevation's very similar for even with just humans itself, as far as starting off at a low altitude or high altitude. I'm not sure if you've been on a bunch of hikes or not. I go on many hikes, but it's not necessarily just more difficult to end the hike because of the track you went. But when you first start off, it's a lot easier just because of the oxygen and the carbon dioxide within the air itself. So how elevation works with plants is when a plant has more oxygen, it actually grows and fruits a lot quicker versus at higher elevations because there's a lack of oxygen. And what happens is when a plant has a lack of oxygen itself, it has to produce in another way. So what happens is it makes lactate, which makes lactic acid. And that's the substitute that it's going to work off of, just because, like, very similar. We're similar to lactic acid because that's what happens when your body starts to hurt after you work out. So it sounds like a bad thing, but for these plants, it's very wonderful because what happens is it actually creates a more creamier, fruity, and acidic, and it balances the bitterness in the coffee bean itself when it's at a higher altitude. But the only problem is that they can't produce as many as they would at a, you know, if you're closer to the sea level.
Okay, I guess that sort of stands to reason. So it would seem then that there goes hand in hand with the problem of beans growing at a higher elevation. They are necessarily harder to get to. And wouldn't that have something to do as far as impacting the cost of the beans? Because it's just, they're harder to farm?
Yes. So when you're at a lower altitude or elevation, and when you're actually farming the beans itself, they can use machines to gather all the beans. And I mean, you know, they hook it up to a machine, they basically strip all the beans off the tree itself. Versus when it's at a higher altitude, when it's at a higher elevation, what happens is that they have to hand pick these beans. So when you hand pick these cherries off a tree, which, you know, have the bean itself, there's a benefit that goes with that. When you use a machine to extract the beans off the tree, you're going to take all the fruit off the tree. So the problem is maybe half of the tree is not ripe yet, and you're going to have to waste those beans. You're going to have to toss them because they're not ready to pick. Versus if you're hand picking them, you actually can go through the process of picking just the beans itself that are ready to harvest. And then you can go back, you know, maybe in like a month or another month to actually harvest it, because coffee only has two harvesting seasons, October to February. And then that's the biggest yield. And then the smaller yield is a little bit down the line in June, but most farmers won't even pick the beans in June just because they want to give it a full year.
So if this, that was, I'm actually a little surprised by that answer. I'm trying to figure out, and I'm visualizing all of the coffee that we are drinking was picked in just a short window of time. So how do growers manage the elements of either rot, or is there such a, are coffee beans prone to pests, either insect or animal or biological? I mean, this is something I actually didn't think about. How do they keep the coffee beans from, how do they protect the coffee beans so they have a product to sell? That's the question.
So a lot of these farmers actually build facilities to actually store the beans throughout the year. So what they'll do is they'll go through hundreds of tons of coffee, and they'll pick it all. They'll prepare it perfectly. And then what they'll do is they'll put it in their facility, which they make sure is fully sealed off. Because the biggest problem in Thailand is mold. So that's what they're always fighting against. And when I talk to the farmers about what they're actually concerned is of holding these coffee beans for so long. And this is pre-roasted too. This is the green bean itself. They're always saying that mold can grow on them very easily. So the problem is that they have to find a facility that, you know, that eliminates mold in general. And so these huge buildings that, you know, they maintain and they check periodically just to make sure everything is perfect in essence. So that's the biggest concern is the mold here. Throughout the world, I'm pretty sure there's other problems, but I'm not 100% sure on what they're going against. But I'm pretty sure that they're building facilities to store the bean itself after the whole process is finished.
Right. Well, that makes, I'm assuming Thailand is a lot like Florida, very humid and muggy and lots of moisture in the air.
Yes.
So for just talk for 1 second, I'm going to get back into the coffee part, but I'm thinking a little bit. So as the coffee trade goes in Thailand, so we've got people and machines.
Yes.
Probably together working to harvest the beans. The beans are assembled. So we have a working class of people who are doing the work.
Correct.
And so there's facilities, there's factories. As far as Thailand goes, what is the condition of work for the workers? Are they treated well? We often, I think, sort of think that, oh, this big industry is just, you know, paying these workers 10 cents a day and they're working 27 hours a day and they get 5 minutes of sleep and they get, you know, just all of the horrors of idiocy. But how is the working conditions in Thailand?
So I know everything based off of what I see personally and what I talk to the farmers itself when I go there. And from what I see there, they're extremely happy. Everyone from the farmers down to the kids and just the area itself. When you talk about the harvesting season itself, is a lot of these farms, they only have work for, you know, 2 to 4 months. And so what happens is the rest of the time I ask them, what do you guys do? I'm going to say 70% to 80% of the people that work up there do not do anything except for that. So they're like on strict vacation mode after. They make all their money within the 3 to 4 months. They save it all. And then they just, you know, they spend what they, you know, they allocate money per month until the next harvesting season. The big thing a lot of people don't know about is Thailand used to be one of the biggest opium, if not the biggest opium distributors in the world. And what happened was in around 1960, 1970, King Rama IX, which was the previous king, he just passed away about a year or two ago, I believe, wanted to introduce farmers to another source of income without selling drugs. So he started something called a Royal Project. And basically what the Royal Project does is it creates and supports all of these farmers. The project, in my eyes, is extremely awesome because you don't hear about any of this type of stuff in other coffee-related farm areas. And what happened is Doi Chang in Chiang Rai province is where coffee for Arabica, high-quality coffee bean, is actually grown. So what he did was, if you have a chance or anyone ever has a chance to go there, you can actually go to the Royal Project in Chiang Rai and go and see what they're actually working on, because it's open to the public. And you can, and what they do is they don't just research and sell coffee itself. They research every type of produce and what can actually sustain up in the mountains, what is worth growing and putting time and effort to, what can actually make the farmers a decent income. Like, for instance, last year when I went, I noticed that the pineapple fields that they had on the bottom of their mountains, why they were they completely looked like they were not maintained and just they didn't care. And I asked them, why don't you guys take care of you guys' pineapples anymore? And they said, well, we don't sell the pineapples anymore because we don't get enough when we sell it, because there's such a huge mass production of pineapple farms around the world that they only get 0.8 baht, which comes out to 2.5 cents per full-grown pineapple, which at today's conversion rate, which to me doesn't make sense. You're going to spend all that time harvesting the pineapples and you only get 2.5 cents per pineapple. So it makes sense for them to ditch it. These researchers do amazing things for the farmers. The farmers themselves, most of the farmers, not all, but most in Chiang Rai are from a Ka family, which is a type of tribe, basically. And they started the coffee industry up there. And what happens is they get paid their schools for kids, like they build schools for them, housing, education for the farmers. And it just, they do a lot. And the, you know, the farmers itself are actually pretty well off from what I've seen. I mean, the housing's very nice. Now, the little huts that they live in when they actually farm the coffee beans, I personally wouldn't enjoy it, but the Thai people enjoy staying out there close to the farms during harvesting season. But when they're actually at home, that's, you know, I see that. And you know, they have nice newer cars and their housing's very modern and nice. So I'm pretty sure from what I see, everyone is taken care of pretty well.
David, let's take a minute for a word from one of my affiliates. Valentine's Day is approaching, yes, and you need a plan. Chocolate is the right idea, but not that tired old grocery store chocolate, and not even the chocolate from that store in the mall with the naked lady and the horse. Your recipient deserves the best, and the best is Z-Chocolat. Z-Chocolat, or Z-Chocolat, is the premier chocolatier of France, and Z-Chocolat ships to nearly every place around the world. Learn how their all-natural, high-quality ingredients, impeccable flavors, and uncompromising standards earn them worldwide respect. And the mahogany gift boxes are almost as amazing as the chocolates they hold. Click over to culinarylibertarian.com/zvalentine for the link to shop their Valentine's selection. culinarylibertarian.com/zvalentine. Now, let's get back into the show. Well, that's good to know. So just, you know, coffee beans, coffee plants, just like any other plant, there are many factors that contribute to the quality of the fruit. So heat, water, pests. Is there something that the Thai farmers are doing to help as much as they can ensure some consistency in their coffee beans?
Yes. So Thai coffee farmers have a very good relationship with the people that roast their coffee themselves, and also when they import the coffee from the importer. So they let those people know everything before they get it, so they know what to tell the roaster, how to roast the bean. Basically, nature has the biggest impact out of anything when growing any type of plant. And coffee being, you know, not an exception, it still has to go through. So like, for instance, if coffee gets too much rain during the year, it can actually make the coffee itself turn into a sour state when it's roasted. So they need to tell the roasters how to roast the bean to actually balance the flavor itself. Another thing is you have to plant other types of plants around coffee plants because it actually absorbs the flavor itself and puts in the bean. So no matter where you buy coffee from, even if you bought it in the same city, every farm will be different based off of what the farmer thought of putting in the soil. So most farms in Thailand will plant flavors of plants that will, you know, seep within the cherry itself. Pomegranate, persimmons, macadamia nuts, pomelo, and oranges. You see a lot of those plants all around the farm. And then you'll see a couple of coffee plants. And then you see another type of plant that I mentioned there too. So it helps out with pests because pests will actually usually go towards the bigger type of fruits. And at the same time, you're also helping the flavor of the coffee have a distinct flavor itself. And it shades the coffee because coffee can't be in a direct sunlight. And so it has this very harmonious ecosystem that they build at these farms, and it prevents them from using, you know, chemicals, because they're really against using chemicals up in these farms. And some farms use chemicals, but a lot of the gourmet style farmers won't use it for their beans.
Now, that I did not know. So are these fruits also a cash crop, or is it entirely just for the coffee?
They don't sell any of the fruits at all. It's just for the coffee. Now, the farmers will pick them and eat them for snacks or for their own personal digest, because a lot of the farmers there are about 100% sustainability. And so they try to use everything possible from everything. Like one of the things that I saw when I was up there that I don't see a lot of traveling is coffee tea. And when I first was handed it to me, I never refuse anything when I go anywhere and it's handed to me, because I feel like if you refuse it, it looks bad on you. So I'm not a big tea drinker. They offered it to me. And for me, when somebody says coffee tea, it sounds very odd. And I don't want to drink tea that tastes like coffee. So I took a sip of it. I smelt it. And it's not the bean they make the tea with. It's the actual fruit of the cherry that they make the tea with. So it actually, it's very fruity. It's a little sweet and it has a very nice smell to it. So in that sense, I was very impressed with the tea, and I would recommend getting the tea if you could somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. That's a clever use of the fruit. I like that. We've got the beans. The farmer has talked to the roaster about what special conditions exist in these beans so that the roasting can be done right. What happens to the bean and the caffeine, the caffeine, the bitterness, what's going on in the roaster to that bean when that high heat is applied?
Okay, so you'll be familiar with this because I'll just put it in a different terminology. Roasting beans is very similar to baking. You're basically baking the bean in an oven in a sense, but you're using this roaster machine. So similar to like bread, right? You have your basic dough. You just let it rest. It grew double in size. That's kind of like if you would think of your green bean. It's raw. It's not done yet. Then when you put in the bean itself into the roaster, and then it would be a light or medium roast, that's kind of when your bread is starting to brown. And at that point, you can actually take it out. It's done. Now, dark roast is similar to like burnt bread. It's almost to the point where it's completely burnt, and it highly affects the taste and the bitterness in the coffee when you get to that extreme. The roast itself can affect the bitterness, but there's a lot of other things when you extract the coffee itself, when you're making your cup of coffee, that will actually give it worse flavors than the roast itself. So for instance, brew time, which is your pouring time for making your pour over coffee, your espresso, things like that. Your barista is your best friend because these are baristas that are real baristas, not ones that just push buttons. And I won't name names of places that do that. But if you have a true barista that knows their coffee, they are your best friend because they can tell you everything. when the coffee was roasted, where the beans are originated from, things like that. And they know the brew times and they keep an eye out for certain things. And some machines out there make it easier than other machines out there to actually work. So it's like a high grade tool that helps you out. And like my favorites are Slayer and La Marzocco. La Marzocco is considered one of the best machines in the world. And then Slayer is from Washington, actually. And they completely created a new type of espresso machine that actually helps out make a, in a sense, a perfect cup. So caffeine itself is very bitter, the taste of caffeine. So most people think that, oh, if I just keep my water in the coffee itself, I'll get a stronger type of coffee. You kind of will, because you're going to let it seep for longer, but you're going to get a higher bitterness taste. So what I normally tell people is, if you really want higher caffeine, add more coffee grounds to your coffee. So that way you don't have to keep it sitting as a longer time. So if you're doing espresso, instead of doing a single basket for a one shot, do a double basket and just make a one shot with it. Or you can do a double shot, depending on if you want more content of water added to it. Because a perfect shot of espresso is anywhere from 25 to 35 seconds. Anything shorter or longer can affect the taste, as far as, like, for instance, if your coffee comes out very sour, it wasn't extracted properly because of the fact that the grounds itself were too coarse and they weren't fine enough, and or the temper was, when they pushed the beans down, was too soft and not hard enough. And if it tastes burnt, the espresso has been over extracted, so it's been too packed, or the grinds are too fine, or the water flow itself is too slow. So mainly pouring the cup of coffee does more effect than with the caffeine and bitterness than actually the roasting of the bean.
Wow, there's, and I didn't realize, I mean, I sort of knew that there was some skill to it. I had no idea it was just that so precise. It's kind of impressive.
Yeah, it's the grind itself, how fast or slow the water is going, and the actual barista, if they're tempering their grounds too hard or too lightly. Those were probably the three biggest factors of how your type of coffee is going to come out. There are companies out there that like to use certain machines where they just push a button and everything's all in one, because it continues to make a standard taste the same cup of coffee. You can't screw up, basically. I could put you in there, you push a button, you know what to do.
There is something to be said for consistency.
Yeah, consistency isn't bad. So, you know, there are places that people generally go to because of the consistency, not necessarily that they know they're going to get the best cup of coffee.
Right. All right. So one of the challenges that I have when I go shopping for coffee, and so I, you know, at least the American grocery stores I go to, there's pretty much the same selection all the time. And there's a dozen or so brand names that I recognize. And for the most part, I dismiss them out of hand, because using your baking analogy, a medium roast is fine, like a just done loaf of bread is fine. I like a little extra on my, especially croissants. I like my croissants an extra minute or two inside. I want them burnt, of course, that would be silly, but I like them a little extra toasty, because I like that sort of dancing up to the edge of bitterness to go with everything else. Now, by itself, that's no good, but you have the nice soft crumb of the croissant.
Yes.
And maybe you have something else going with it. So now you're balancing that bitterness out. So now you're getting actual flavor with stuff. So I want actual flavor in my coffee, and most of them just don't do it. It's just hot brown liquid in the morning. So I'm a little bit fussy, but I'm sure everyone has a preference. So this is the question that's the hard one to answer, I think. All things being equal, how does a consumer looking at this wall of bags of coffee make a determination about what do I buy? How do we do this? How do we learn from the package what we want to have?
Okay, so going into a grocery store and looking for coffee can be very overwhelming to people that are not used to buying coffee. I mean, you see, you know, at least 30 brands in a small shop. If you go into, like, say, like a Walmart in the States or something, you're going to be overwhelmed with the type of brands that you see. So the biggest thing is, when I tell people, is look for a coffee brand that has the roast date on the package. That is probably your most important thing out of anything when you're looking at a coffee bag. The roast date is when the coffee has been roasted. The longer the roast date has been away from, the lower quality, because it keeps degrading. So you don't want to buy a coffee bag that says, oh, best used by, like an expiration date, because coffee could have been roasted 4 to 6 months ago. And, you know, and the best by use by is, you know, in, so 6 months could have gone by since it's been roasted. And by then, the coffee is going to be very bland itself. And you're not going to be impressed by the cup. But if you can get something that's been roasted that week or 2 weeks from then, you'll see a huge difference. You'll pay a bit more because those companies specialize in coffee. But you'll get a better cup of coffee overall. The next thing I would recommend when you look for a thing is, like, for instance, in Hawaii, Kona coffee is considered one of the best coffees in the world. You have to really look at, when you're looking at the bag, you'll see bags that say Kona coffee, huge and bold on the top. But in the very small print underneath it, you'll see a word blend. Blend you see a lot in coffee. Blend basically is when you want to turn the package over and look and see how much of the real Kona coffee is actually in this bag. Usually it's only 10%, sometimes 20%, and they take 80% of other beans, which are similar, like Arabica beans, and it's not using the Kona coffee, and they mix it together. So it's, they're blends, they're not a single origin bean that you get where it's all Kona coffee. If you get an all Kona coffee bag, you're gonna spend a lot of money for it, but it's gonna taste better just because of that single origin. And you'll be able to taste, in a sense, what the farmers grew around there, because it'll, like I said earlier, the plants that are grown around is what you'll taste. That's kind of the two biggest things I would look at when looking at a store of what I'm going to buy. You know, the roast have things to do with it. You know, light roast is you know, less in the oven. You know, medium's longer, and then dark is the longest. And you know, I can talk more about that as far as what can meet every customer's needs. And I can explain how from the where the bean's planted all the way to when the coffee bean itself gets taken, what will actually, how I can stray certain customers to certain places. Like, as a consumer, what would work for you better than another person? Because it's all personal preference at the end of the day.
Right. And so that would be, I mean, that would be a challenge for anybody. But let's take a moment here. I did ask you, and you provided me a couple of titles of some books for people who want to read more, to learn more about coffee's origins and coffee production. Remind me what those books were, please.
World's Atlas of Coffee, The Birth of Coffee, Coffee Obsessions, and All About Coffee.
Excellent. And I will put a link on the show notes page at culinarylibertarian.com/19. And there will be links for those books there. That way we just, you know, people can educate themselves. We have a reading audience. So let's get into the reading. All right. So I've got my beans. I've read the bag. So also, I just, there seems to me a similarity to both wine and olive oil, where we're looking for, now blends aren't inherently bad, of course, for wines, but we're looking for a single origin, we're looking for a fresh made date, whereas, the wine didn't destroy, but on olive oils, we will have a date of pressing. So we're looking for a date on the bag to indicate when the beans were roasted. We want to make sure if we want single origin beans, we want what we're paying for. So we want to have this information about our product. So I've bought my bag. I bought them in beans. And so at my house, I actually do have a proper, for real coffee grinder, not one of those little food processor smashers. So now I've ground the beans and I've got them to the consistency and the size grind I want. Now what do I do? I'm sure that nearly everybody has the same thing I have, is a drip Mr. Coffee style coffee maker. Now, as it happens, I also have a Sicilian espresso coffee maker and I have a French press. But for the person who's looking for, I've just spent, a good amount of money on a bag of coffee. How do I get the best flavor from this coffee? What do I do?
So there's two things, and it's funny because you mentioned the two that you would do at home. The first one would be a pour over or Chemex, which is very similar to your drip coffee. And the second one's a French press. Those are the two that I would recommend to use at home because you don't have the proper machines like an espresso machine, which can really extract the flavor. At home, it would be either the pour over or Chemex or a French press. And this is the thing. They're both done a little bit differently. So for instance, if you have a regular pour over drip style coffee with a Chemex, one of the biggest tips I can give to you to get more out of your coffee is pre-wet your filter before you put the grounds in. That way, the filter itself is already damp. And so when the water hits the filter, it doesn't generally just seep right through the bean into the cup and you get more of a bland, diluted cup of coffee. So that's the first thing I'll do is pre-wet the filter before you do it. The next thing you want to do is you want to make your water to about 200 degrees Fahrenheit. For those that don't have a temperature gauge, I'm pretty sure you do because you bake and I have one also. But for those at home that don't have that, what you do is you boil water right when water gets to boiling temperature. Then you take it off the stove and let it rest for 30 seconds. At that point, the water will be at 200 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's the water that you'll use when you pour into your coffee beans itself. And you don't want to just pour it directly in the center. You kind of want to go around the bean so that it all, gets damp itself. So it all has a consistent flow. That's how I would use for a cup of coffee. Now, this allows, when you do a pour over coffee, this allows the most readily soluble parts of the coffee to go in your cup of coffee. You lose the full body flavor of like a French press, but you do get a lighter cup of coffee that gives you more natural notes itself. So for somebody with a Chemex or pour over, I would recommend if you have like a light roasted coffee or a natural processed bean instead of a washed processed bean, because you're going to get more of the flavors of the coffee and you're going to be able to taste the floral and acidic and a little bit of that sour that you want from those type of coffees versus if you have a medium or dark roast, I'd probably go with a French press because it's full immersion in your brewing method and you're going to brew it for about 4 to 5 minutes and gram of coffee to water ratio, I would probably recommend 54 grams of coffee to 860 grams of water. And obviously if you want less coffee or you would just do the math to change out the coffee to the water itself. And what you get with this is, you get that full body because you get the oils that mix within the coffee because it's a longer brew time. So those are the two I would recommend for home use.
All right. So that's just shy of 2 ounces of coffee.
So if you want more, you go more.
All right. Well, so one of the things, I think we see every couple of years, everything we eat and drink is at some particular point in time, the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. Stop drinking coffee, you'll get cancer. Oh, drink more coffee, it cures cancer. So what are the health benefits of coffee?
The health benefits of coffee itself, there's pros and cons to everything, right? So these are proven, medical researched, topics of what coffee does help and what doesn't help. For instance, coffee actually helps against Parkinson's disease, like prior to you getting it. If you drink coffee, it can actually reduce the risk of getting it. Type 2 diabetes is another thing. as long as you're not one of those that puts, you know, a ton of sugar in your coffee. This is people that drink their coffee black or with, you know, cream or milk. Livers love coffee because it actually prevents the disease and cancer in livers. And it actually decreases the risk of depression. And it also helps you burn fat because caffeine makes you more active. Now, that being said, that's the good benefits of it. Now, the bad benefits of it, and these are based off high consumptions of coffee, meaning if you're drinking more than 2 cups of coffee a day, it can actually elevate your cholesterol level. It can increase the risk of heart disease because your body actually can't break down caffeine quick enough if you're drinking that much caffeine in your body itself. So those are kind of like the pro and cons of coffee.
Well, those sound either like scary cons or promising pros. All right. So we talked last time about your bakery in Thailand. And so I will repost your social media information. Is there anything else going on in David's life that you want to let us know about?
Everything's pretty much the same. I'm still doing my bakery. I might open up another restaurant, but that's still under talk, so I'm not sure yet.
Well, if you open a restaurant, say goodbye to your girls.
Yeah, I know, right?
You'll never see them again. David, thank you very much. I know that for your time, it's not even 8 o'clock in the morning, so I appreciate you getting up and helping me with this, and I know you've got a big day going on, so go ahead and get your day going, and thank you again, and have a spectacular day in Thailand. What's the weather in Thailand today?
It's actually good. It's like 68 degrees right now, which is unheard of, but this is up north. Like in Bangkok, it's always like 100 degrees.
Ugh.
But yeah, like up here today and last night was about 68, give or take. It'll probably get up to about 80 today. So it's a good day. It's very unheard of. Normally it's, you know, even up here, it's usually like 100 with a huge high humidity percentage. So I'm very happy. But the problem is I'm not going to benefit because I'm going to be out at work.
Well, the American listeners appreciate your use of Fahrenheit instead of Celsius, so it doesn't mean anything when you say it's only 19 degrees. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I have to get used to living here because I talk in pounds and Fahrenheit, and everyone always looks at me confused here, so I have to like convert to centimeters, and it's so difficult, but it's getting easier as time goes.
Well, it will. It's like anything else. It's a tool. You have to use it. All right. Well, again, I thank you so much. I appreciate your time and your information, and have a spectacular day.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks. All right. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that's going to do it. Find the books David mentioned at the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/19, as well as links to the affiliates mentioned on today's episode. The next episode will be a listener-requested episode about the mother sauces. It's a big bite. Pun intended. So I'll see how that goes. I've got some other exciting interviews lined up. One scheduled with a well-traveled, world-famous economist. That's going to be pretty exciting. If you enjoy the show, please do join the ranks of my patrons at Patreon. You can find a link for my Patreon support page at culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts. Thank you. Have a great week. See you soon.
Am I too loud or soft or anything? Oh, okay.
No, good. I've just, last couple of interviews have had some issues that I wasn't able to fix, but we finally made things work. But, you know, this lack of moving parts thing, I don't know what's wrong.
Oh, that's funny. How you been?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm good.
I saw somewhere an ad for some of your cookies, and they still look really good.
Yeah, I started using the Facebook advertisement more just because in Thailand, there's a really big e-commerce for like Facebook and Instagram. It's crazy how many shops there are in Thailand just off of that.
Huh. Well, I wish you success with the Facebook ads, because I have not had any luck with them, so.
Oh. they work pretty well here, but I don't know about the States. That's the only thing.
Well, it's a good way to spend a lot of money and get nothing for it.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so are you off today? You got things to do.
I have a bunch of stuff to do today, actually, for the next, 2 weeks.
Busy bit. Well, I'm glad we got this in then. So, so of course, I will record the guest intro part later on.
Okay.
We'll just take a moment here, and I'll say welcome, and we'll pick up from there, and we'll dive right in.
Okay, sounds good.
So, welcome, David.
Hello, welcome. Sorry. It's still early in the morning. You try that again.